your punk. You got to get ready for the big payback.
The big payback. We are children of survivors of the civil rights movement. So our parents went through it and have the have the kind of experience firsthand where they can, like my mom can tell me about going down to Arkansas and visiting family and having the, you know, colored water fountain and the white water fountain, as where I don't have that experience to share with Eli. And so it's going to make a difference in terms of how their minds or how they just react to the experience.
Prime example, because not to cut you off, but when I heard you say that, it made me think about every year when I was teaching U.S. history with fifth graders, and all of them just couldn't believe the idea of being oppressed. Because the first thing out of their mouth was like, oh, hey, I would have did this, and I would have did that. And I was like, have you ever heard of divide and conquer? I literally had to like simulate divide and conquer and say, okay, all my gifted kids, you're gifted. I gave them titles, labels. Were they really gifted? No. But I had to really, because their mentality was like, oh, hell no. Why didn't they just all jump on the white people?
Right.
And then there would have been no slavery, you know, so that their reaction.
It's funny. Calvin Candy asked that question himself in the movie. How come all the slaves don't just fight back? Why not just get together
one
and fight back?
One of the best messages of the movie, actually, and one I think for me, something I wanted to discuss with this group is this idea that, you know, I think it's a perfect segue into the Samuel Jackson's character and this idea of loyalty and the mental slavery. I mean, if you guys really think about it, when you think about just look this table, right? Let's say if we went and got six more black people from, I don't know, a really impoverished part of LA, and then let's say we got six people from the rural South, right? We would all have different ideas on how to solve things and figure out life. And for some people, they probably were like, you know what? I can get in this house, and all I got to do is be good to Massa, and I don't have to do with that brutality.
Absolutely.
This is going to be my life.
Absolutely.
And I'm not, and I don't care. Like, and I just don't judge people. I could never judge my ancestors and what roles that they had to play, because that the horrific.
They didn't have a choice.
You didn't have a choice, and I don't know what any of us. You know, we could. Some of us could have been in that barbaric Mandingo fight. But I just want to say this as a person who, as a profession, I'm in the entertainment business, but particularly the fine arts. And I have to say, and this may be an issue with the table, I was very, very disappointed in the casting of Jamie Foxx as Django. And I'll tell you why. First of all, I am highly opposed to stunt casting in anything that has to do with high art. And I feel like if this Jamie Foxx is the reason why he won an Oscar for Ray is because he's an incredible imitator. That is his gift. He can imitate the hell out of something or someone. He is not what I would call a very trained actor. And so there were moments in the movie where I was like, that should have been pulling at people's heartstrings. There's something, I should have felt something there, and I felt nothing. The scene where he talks to him about Brunhilde and the story of Brunhilde, I was like, oh, it was bad. It was just bad to me because I was just like, I don't believe him. I didn't believe any of his backstory as a character. I just didn't. I didn't believe him as an actor, and it wasn't moving at all.
What would you have liked to see?
I was trying to think of this with some people earlier today, and when I'm talking about like skill of acting, I'm talking about you need to go Idris Elba skill of acting. Someone who can carry off the depth of it's Django is not just a hero in this. Django has such a mental, his life is so complex.
Well, there were several people tied to this film, Idris being one of them, early on. The actual Tarantino said he wrote it with Will Smith in mind.
I was gonna say,
but Will Smith turned him down. Idris Elba was tied to it. I think Michael, Omar from The Wire, Michael with the scar. He was tied to it. I think he would have been great.
The problem is that, well, they could have built.
No problem, though.
But there was. There was somebody else who was tied to it too, but I guess in the end, Jamie Foxx ended up.
No offense to our gay listeners, homosexuals.
Correct, because that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter at all, as long as you're able to.
Is he funny?
I mean,
what does that mean? blackness commentator.
We talking about sexuality. I mean, because Jamie Foxx's sexuality could be questionable if we're talking about pop culture. But anyway, first of all, before
that was politically incorrect with funny,
before
let me go on record and clean it up for Malcolm over here.
Please, go ahead.
Just to jump in real quick on some stuff that we were saying before. I do a lot of tutoring for kids and teenagers and stuff, and kids have kind of a hard time until a certain point thinking metaphorically. And so about a week ago, black girl, 20-something, was rubbing my head. She's like, "You have thick hair." I was like, "Yeah, I know I need to get a haircut." And she's like, "No, it's not like it's like African hair. It's, you have good hair or whatever." And I'm like, "There it is." You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just a lot of things that people don't get that are still carrying through. And so one of the things, too, I think, is that we may need to reconsider how we teach black history, that a lot of times we start with slavery or we start with that. Like, we can start with African history. We can start with a whole bunch of things.
Agreed.
And then when we get into slavery, then you start asking questions like, well, if we were able to do all this, then how does this happen?
Right.
And if that happened with such a people that did all this stuff, then it must have been real. You know what I'm saying? So I think that that's something to consider, that I think a lot of times kids run away from it, because even for me, my mom taught me black history real early, but I got tired of hearing of slavery. And she taught me other things, Benjamin Banneker and all that stuff. But there, every time it got to that, she was especially making sure, and, you know, seeing Sankofa, and, you know, there's other movies about slavery, but there's a lot of other movies that don't. You know what I'm saying? They do it in such a way that all you do is just come out feeling like angry at everything. Right. And it just, it depresses you more than
uplifts you.
Yeah, than it gives you any power. But aside from that, I do largely agree about the Jamie Foxx choice. He's more of an imitator than an actor.
And I just want to say, I'm sorry, I'm very passionate about this, and I apologize for interrupting, but that would not happen with a white period film. And that's what frustrates me about this obsession, particularly in black Hollywood, with celebrity. You know, Samuel L. Jackson, everyone, you know, he may have had Snakes in the Plane as his last career. He's just making money right now. But Samuel L. Jackson is a serious theater actor. He came from the theater. Mm-hmm. And any real actor will tell you that if you want to have respect, you got to go do some theater.
But I wonder otherwise,
and I'm not saying it because I am saying it because I'm in the theater, because I know it and I see it. Because in theater, there are no second takes. You have to get it right on the first scene and that first audience. And that's when people know, oh, you can really do your thing. Idris Elba is the bomb. He can do some serious theater.
I wonder how many actors just did not want to play this role.
No, I mean, I know that's the case, but I also know Hollywood, and I also know that Schindler's List was not going to be played by none of their comedians in the white community. That's what I know.
Let me say.
You mean Jim Carrey couldn't be in Schindler's List?
I'm just saying, but okay.
At all.
I'm sorry. let me just take it back then. Inglourious Basterds. There was nobody in that film that was not taken really as a serious actor. No, but Brad Pitt played a comedic. He played a comedic role in that sense. He was, and he played a Yankee kind of cowboy.
You could say that about Jamie Foxx. I'm not actually disagree with you. I actually agree, but I think you could say that about Jamie Foxx.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I just really get tired of, like. And this is a whole nother podcast, but it's just very, very frustrating as somebody who does this for a living to see people getting roles who you've seen some of the finest actors in America on stages and on television series. And then when it comes to something, because you didn't need Jamie Foxx to sell this movie, it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. So that's not the excuse, is that you needed a A-list celebrity. I just really wanted, like, the pathos and the depth of what Django is going through, coupled with him being the spaghetti Western, coupled with the character that Quentin's Tarantino's trying to create, to all be a cohesive, have a cohesive portrayal. If you look at the other black actors who are playing roles in that part, you could see some of these extras and some of these people who had no lines, but even in their facial expression, you could tell that they had some training that just let you know what was going on in their whole story without them having a line. And that's the only point I will make. And also I want to make the point that I just was a little disappointed that the black female character had nothing to say, and I wanted her to have lines. That was very frustrating for me.
Here.
Yeah.
Mark.
Particularly since the white woman who was a sister who really, why she have lines, but the protagonist is love, who he's going to save, doesn't say anything, and then at the end of the movie is going, nothing in English.
Yeah, she had a lot of lines in German. Somebody did make that point too, that Kerry Washington was underutilized in this film, considering the caliber of actress that she is.
I was going to say is that sometimes to get a movie made, I know, you know, I also work in entertainment, unfortunately, but it is, you wouldn't believe what it takes sometimes. Even a Quentin Tarantino movie, like, would need, especially for a black role, it has to be a star. I mean, just has to, unfortunately. I mean, it sucks that it's like that, but that's just how movie industry, especially white people, think. Like,
yeah, he has to have a, Tarantino has to have an A-list actor. Yeah,
absolutely. But that, but you guys, I just want you guys to understand, how this happens. Because see, in Hollywood, white people have tons of A-list celebrities to go to. Yeah. Right. But with us, who are they going to? And I'm not, this is no disrespect to Jamie, because I really respect him. But who do we go to? We go to a comedian. At the root of Jamie Foxx, he is a comedian. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you're asking. Well, but you're asking for like a not serious funny movie to have somebody. No, do I think there could have been somebody better? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, but there goes back to your argument that why there were not many black people nominated. Well, you thought Jamie Foxx was bad, so he's not going to get nominated.
Well, he also didn't have the script didn't really give him anything to work with.
But I was going to say, quick point, when you brought it up before, it really clicked in my head that he could have partially did that based on the times where black people couldn't just ramble the fuck on and talk.
Yes, they could. When they were together.
Like Samuel Jackson did.
When Dr. Schultz and Django were together, there could have been some serious dialogue there. He was telling a story, but there could have been. But what I'm saying is Django could have told us about his love, that this whole thing is about her.
Well, he describes it, but I mean that's why Christopher Waltz is more of the main character.
I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it because I'm telling you they wouldn't have the same.
Yeah, but reverse. I think if
you would not have in Schindler's List, and I'm sorry to go back to Schindler's List, but I'm just trying to give you clear.
But Malcolm, I said if you want.
Okay, I'm sorry. Inglourious Basterds. No. Inglourious Basterds. If you look at.
If he had a lot of dialogue, would you have said, just give me dialogue and maybe sacrifice the movie ever getting made, but maybe cutting back the dialogue and getting this out?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't be surprised if dialogue was cut because that Jamie just couldn't handle it.
Some dialogue was cut because it was cheesy. I remember that from the script. There were some pieces of dialogue that did cheapen the entire experience. Mm. And that stuff that they definitely cut.
And the black character that gets the most lines is the most ignorant and annoying character of the whole movie. And that's Samuel.
Okay, hold on. Hey, can we make your point, and then I need to get into
okay,
Sam Jackson.
I have a point on that too when we talk about Sam Jackson. But okay, couple things
about
real quick.
You were pissed.
Well, here's the thing. I agree. There's a line where I agree and I disagree with this. One of the things that I was talking to my homie about is that there is a very big, serious problem going on in black entertainment right now with the idea of craftsmanship. Yeah. There is no black Quentin Tarantino. You know what I'm saying? There's no black Ang Lee. You know what I'm saying? So the level at which black people, because a lot of times we think, I can sing, you know, I can act, I can do this, I can show out and call attention to myself. But do you know how the craft of what you're doing?
Right.
And so to that extent, that's why Quentin Tarantino did get Samuel L. Jackson.
Where's black Kate Winslet, black Meryl Streep?
I mean, Kerry Washington is the only other person coming up in that. You know what I'm saying? But insofar as who else?
Are you having a tantrum over here?
but the thing is like, yeah, who else would you get? And you only really have a handful of people. And with Hollywood, they're like, look, I need a return on my investment. So whoever you getting as the star needs to give me my money.
They need to be able to put
seats
in the theater.
Yeah, besides this Christoph Waltz who, you know, teenagers ain't, who's that?
Right.
Who's Don Johnson? Leonardo DiCaprio, okay, cool. But, he's even getting older now.
Right.
So now you got to get somebody that's instantly recognizable for that. Now, the thing is that to a certain extent why it works for Jamie Foxx is because since this is supposed to be a largely Western thing, a lot of Westerns, I don't know if you would necessarily call Clint Eastwood a good actor because in a lot of Westerns, you don't have to say very much. He just comes in there, looks hard, starts blasting people away. All you know is, I'm angry. This happened. I'm going to get this. There's nothing else for me to say. I'm shooting people. That's it. And so that's why a large part of the way, like, he can kind of get away with that. And I do understand what you're saying, that there is.
But there is no compassion for me at all for the protagonist. Whereas in other films, particularly like if we're going to go back to Inglourious Basterds, you have compassion for the protagonist. And I'm saying in the protagonist, you have the story. The whole premise of this movie is about this journey of these two men to go save this man and to free his wife.
Right.
And nothing about that story, nothing about their love story was moving to me at all.
There's a level. Nothing. There's definitely a level at which, even in silence, I feel like you need to be able to convey a certain amount of strength and energy, and that he didn't quite do that. I do know what you're saying. And the question is I think also as a director, figuring out how to balance all that out in terms of how hard am I going to hit people with that to the point where they might have a hard time even getting through the next 5 minutes. Now, one of the things with that, actually, which was my criticism of it, is actually I felt that the violence in the movie was completely unbalanced. I felt that the violence in it actually was part of the reason why I felt confused and conflicted on how I felt for the characters. Because in, you know, certain scenes, that shooting scene, after a while, got so over the top, and some of the violence got so cartoonish to the point where, even before that, where when Carrie was getting whipped, that scene kind of pulled at me. But then it was also a point where I was thinking to myself, like, if you're showing like this guy getting killed in front of this person and all this stuff, and how Christoph Waltz is, you know, talking very matter-of-factly of who he kills for whatever reason, then that should mean that the violence needs to really play a role here. And so there was just a point where I didn't feel like I felt like anything that was violent happening, even the point where he was almost castrated, there was like these teenagers that were kind of laughing because the guy was holding his dick. And I'm like, well, you don't get it. Like, he's about to get his dick cut off. Like, that's not something that's funny.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, right. That's the thing is that I think that two things. One, I think Quentin.
I remember Kim said, "What am I looking at?" Right.
I felt that largely the violence just wasn't utilized as methodically as it could have. And secondly, because of that, I actually felt that the inconsistency was with Christoph Waltz's character, because it's like, all right, you've been killing all these people, but you have this moral compass where you don't quite seem to like slavery, but you're using it to your advantage. And then, right when we're about to, well, spoiler alert, right? Yeah. Right when everything's about to be cool, now you have this moral conflict going on in your head, and you can't even get out the front door.
It's his ego. You know what I'm saying? It's his ego. Because, and I actually read an article where Tarantino, because somebody gave Tarantino a hard time about it. They were like, the harebrained scheme that you came up with for Schultz to go in there and try to, you know, try to look for a Mandingo fighter to purchase, when actually the purchase is for Broomhilda. He was like, that doesn't make any sense. It would just make sense for him to go straight in there and say, hey, I want to pay an exorbitant amount for a slave that doesn't cost very much, i.e. Broomhilda, who doesn't mean very much to you, and Calvin Candy would go for it. And Tarantino said, but that's how you're thinking as an American. You have to remember, this character is not American. Every time we've seen him, the first time we see him, he's doing so much in regards to trying to get what it is that he wants. Like when he goes to try to purchase Django, it's very extra, his method to go about doing it. Everything about it is dramatic.
Extra,
and so everything that he does, every time he has some sort of transaction, his method of doing it is dramatic. And it's because his ego is so big. He cannot stand the idea of Calvin Candy getting the best of him. And in that moment, Calvin Candy has the upper hand. And so that's why he ends up going that way.
He really thinks he's below him. Yeah. That's why he had to be reminded not to speak French to him. Because he probably would have spoken French, because he's like, he knows he's much smarter than these sort of redneck hicks.
I want to move, though, you guys, because we've been talking for an hour. Okay, go ahead.
Really quick question just on what you said, because I interpreted it a tiny bit differently, and tell me what everybody else thought, because I thought that his plan to go by the guy. I thought he was going to renege. Like,
he totally was.
Like 5 days off the back. So the plan was, I'm not going to pay the $12,000. I'm paying the $300 for the chicken. We're out of here. Never see me
That's
again.
That's exactly
which
what.
Which makes sense.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to pay $12,000.
Right. That would have been. That's what Tarantino said. That was going to be
Jackson's
the plan.
Character called on.
And see, now this is what I want to say about Samuel Jackson. Before we go in on Samuel Jackson, as he said himself, to be the most hated cinematic Negro of all time, we need to first acknowledge what a brilliant acting job Samuel Jackson did in this film.
Strange.
Brilliant.
Brother Malcolm says that he
brilliant.
He needs to be nominated for.
I disliked him as much as I disliked Danny Glover in The Color Purple. Brilliant.
But
brilliant.
But that Negro truly did exist. And that Negro still does exist. Yes.
And even
right,
and even if we look at the way not only that he plays the character of Steven, but when we see him remove the mask a little bit and stop the limp, stop the country ass talk, and actually sit down with a glass of whatever he was drinking
in the library,
right,
the
and
cognac.
Talk to Calvin Candy man to man. I love that. Well, it was at a subservient, but it's also that play that has also that's always been a part of our history where we play subservient, but you always know that the person who you're dealing with is really actually your intellectual superior. He has to play that way with Calvin Candy.
Let me tell you. He
brilliant
for real. Like as my friend pointed out, like he really did play like three different characters.
Yes,
you know what I mean. And the way that he did it was almost like Disney-esque villain type thing.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like it was done real well. As much as I didn't like it, I was just like, look, man, you know.
He's killing his role right now.
To the bitter, bitter end. I mean, really, props to Brother Samuel L. Jackson.
He's going to get nominated for this.
I really hope so because, honestly, it... You know, for those of us who see... You know, we're all... You know, we're able to suspend disbelief. But, I mean, I literally was so pissed off that I started to bring up stuff about, like, just black-on-black crime, black hatred of ourselves. I mean, it just really started to stir within me just all of these issues, and I think that's why for me on that level it became such he became so problematic for me, because I was like, wait a minute, there's something much deeper here that Quentin is getting to, and maybe some black folks told him you need to go there with tips. I don't know because it felt so, and you guys tell me if you felt, I just felt like it felt very internal to us, like the way he talked about things, the way he talked to her, and just watching his behavior, it was almost like pulling off the sheet, like revealing just the darkness and the nasty side of black people and how we've been to ourselves.
And of slavery. Because he said, Samuel said, he and Leo had to work. He said it was imperative that the audience knew that they were a unit. He was like, if we're looking, he said, that whole story that they lay out about the real Broomhilda story and the slaying of the walking through the fire, he was, and you know, slaying of the dragon. He was like, Calvin and I, we are the dragon. He was like, technically it's Calvin, but I'm standing behind him. So it's a two-headed beast, so to speak. And he said, at some point they were rehearsing and he started doing that thing where every last word Leo would say, he would repeat. He said, and it just worked. It was exactly what was needed. That sidekick, everything Master's saying is we. You know, everything you're saying is gospel. And it gave the exact effect that was needed to showcase the nature of that relationship. It was
brilliant.
It was brilliant. Yeah. Painful to watch.
But brilliant. But even Jamie Foxx in his interview with Oprah acknowledged Samuel Jackson as being the main man on the set that brought it together, because he said, you know, he and Carrie had the little jitters about it, but he brought it. Like, we gonna do this film and we gonna do it. He said he didn't break character. He went in there like niggas. He went in there with the spirit of, I'm going to reveal what this was really like, and he was
did it
hands on, because I was in the movie like, this nigga,
right?
And you guys, wasn't it a trip? I mean, this is why you cannot knock really great acting. That the greatest actors can move you without saying a word. Watching the servants move, the choreography of the of the extras who played the servants, it was that to me really put me. I mean, I love that he did that whole scene where he just choreographed how they set the table.
Yeah, that was
because
great.
Because you could tell that a mistake could mean somebody could lose their life.
Right.
On a bad day.
Right.
Somebody could lose their life on a bad day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, breaking of the eggs.
The fact that any human being would have to sit in a metal box where the sun is beating down naked.
That was hard to see, too.
You know what I mean? Like that brutality. Yeah. So for me, that I was very appreciative that I saw how those moments, there were such subtle moments. Every time he would, and I have to give Quentin Tarantino credit because this is a director who looks for this. The first time when they went to kill the first set of brothers, the first bounty killing, and when the camera would cut to how the slaves were looking, I was like, they got it. Those actors, they got it, because that was unheard. You what? And it wasn't even about like, kill the whitey. They were like,
they scared for themselves.
What is about to go down now that you done killed these white people? Mm-hmm. And what are we going to do? I'm talking about when they first went to kill the brothers.
The Brittle Brothers.
That was actually a real, like, supposedly he didn't tell any of the extras what was about to happen. So they thought they knew something was going to happen, but the reaction was very real, and they're surprised because they didn't know he was going to be whipping them and shooting them and all that stuff. So, like, his method of trying to get, like, genuine feeling through, like, there seems to be a lot of things, like, you're talking about the Oprah interview that I need to see, but there's a lot of things that seem to have happened off camera.
A lot.
Didn't quite translate into it, but, yeah.
There were no phones on the set.
Those were real reactions.
The scene where Kerry Washington was whipped, they said the whole set just broke down into tears because they would listen to music every day, and they all wanted to hear, for her beating, I don't know who sings it, but that song, No Weapon Formed Against Me, the gospel song, Fred Hammond. And they said the whole set just like, boom, broke down. Jamie Foxx came in as Jamie Foxx, the celebrity, and Quentin had to tell him day one, like, you're a slave. And he said he got it because, you know, he's got his cell phone in his pocket, his Range Rover key in his pocket. And they really had to, like, shut it down to get people in that spirit, you know, if you can say a spirit, but in it. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they start off the movie when that whole scene where you see Jamie Foxx able to leave and go get the coat, and he flips off, and he does it with the other black guys when they flip off their little robe or whatever the fuck they were given to walk in the cold. It was like, look at all these whips on his back. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And even the big thing with, now I thought in the scene where they were going to declothe Broomhilda, I thought he was going to pull her straight naked, because I thought he was like, oh, you didn't get some of this good? Let me show you what you mean. I thought he was going like full on, like,
yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And I was like, I was actually shocked. Like this, I was like, is he really gonna do this at the dinner table?
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the sister intervened.
Yeah. I was like,
I mean, it's very interesting because honestly, America's not ready for the brutality that really happened in slavery. People in America don't know that slaves were boiled like they were soup. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm constantly like, no, I want you to get what you've done to my people. I want you to get what you've done to us mentally, physically. I wanted to go further. Like, I felt like I wanted to see the abuse of Carrie and the women, because women were probably, I don't know. I would say that I feel like women were really probably got up just because of the, just because they were like, sexually they were taken advantage of.
And we did see the commodification. Like, we didn't see the brutality, but we did see the commodification. That whole Cleopatra club he had in the city with all the light-skinned bunnies, and they in there entertaining the ladies.
Yeah. No, that's
paper
true.
Paper bag colored girls.
They were golden almond. No, I think the most, I mean,
but
like
Tarantino's,
I said,
I'm sorry, brother. I don't mean to cut you off. Tarantino is not the director I would expect to give me that. I get what you're saying of wanting to get it. Tarantino is not who I would
go for.
But
he's the only one who could do that, because right now he's the only director really in Hollywood who goes that gory and goes that violent, and it's accepted and it could be greenlighted.
But there's still always a level, there's always a layer of cheese in there, though.
Spielberg could do it and actually get more.
There's always a layer of cheese in there.
Steven Spielberg
could do it, but he tried with Amistad.
He already did.
He's not gonna do it again. Spike would be the person, I guess, who would do it and truly go there and make motherfuckers uncomfortable because Spike is a revolutionary.
And the truth be told, like, and I don't want to have rose-colored lenses. Like, in general, entertainment is not to think about the atrocities of humanity. So I know that, like, everybody's not knocking down any executive's door or studio's door to do a story about the oppressed people. I mean, there's a story just waiting to be told about the Trail of Tears. You know what I mean? But again, this is a country that does not deal with its history, and we like to run from it. And that, to me, ultimately, just to bring back some of the points from the earlier conversation, that to me is ultimately what is problematic with American education, is that we don't deal in truth. We deal in facades, and we have a microwave culture of everything, including our education, which is why our kids don't know anything about their history. And also, we live in a country where we have not understood that some models and practices don't work. When you go to a museum, the reason why kids love museums is because it's so interactive and there's so much to do, and then your learning is fun. So I'm not mad at kids who are like, this is boring, because we're using the same techniques.
Well, it doesn't have to be fun. It should be engaging.
Okay, fine. But what I'm saying, for a kid, that engagement is fun.
Not necessarily.
It is.
Kids like to have things to do. Now, I can have my kids,
fun, right?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Because I can have my kids acting a fool, and I can have one of them sitting at the table, and then I give the rest of them an assignment to do. It could be academic, not necessarily fun. Here, write your letters. You do this like Tyler's doing. Mm-hmm. Okay, Daddy. But it's
that's
not
true.
Fun.
You're right. You make something a valid to point. Do. It doesn't have to always be engagement. I mean, it always have to be fun. But I think ultimately that is to me the challenge that we have as a society to even get back to our societal roots. Because honestly, and you know how much I love black people and black is family, but I'm telling you, it's an epidemic in American culture. Our culture is being dumbed down to the point that even white kids don't know their white history. And so for me, that moves into another podcast, which is about creating classes of people. Right? Because if you have a class of people who are educated, know how to research, know how to do for themselves, know how to climb that ladder, and then you have people who depend on systems to take care of them or follow behind generations of family that have never moved into another economic class, then you have the haves and the have-nots in America. So I think that's another conversation. But ultimately, I find that it is challenging to bring historical notions, ideas, moments in history to young people. And the question is, what makes it exciting for them? What makes it engaging for them? Because I think that if you showed this movie to a high school class, I think this would really get them talking about, well, what is slavery? Like, I think you could, I mean, because stuff is so violent right now, I guess this was rated R, I guess because of the cursing, you couldn't do middle school.
And the violence.
But for high school.
And the nudity.
I'm like, can I get permission to show this in my ninth grade history class and just start this off like
grade.
That?
It was rated R.
Parents would have to sign off on it.
Well, okay, yeah. But I'm, okay, whatever class, so 12th grade is American history, right? Government?
Yeah. Government.
What is 11th grade? American history or world history?
I'm just saying 12th grade would be the point when most people would be 17 and old enough to see a rated R film.
But in the real world, you just send home a disclaimer to your parents.
Exactly. Let's not play like people. These kids don't know what violence and see violence.
Well, I don't think the challenge would be getting approval from the parents. It would be getting approval from the school and the administration.
Mm-hmm. It has to be a teacher who wants to actually touch on, and this is a totally different type of world we've gone to, but a teacher, and I've always said it, a lot of teachers are afraid to talk in color. In other words, I'm not going to say black in this classroom. I'm not going to say Guatemalan in my classroom. I'm not going to say white in this classroom because I risk being accused or being misunderstood. So it's such a sensitive topic. A lot of teachers don't talk in color.
Yes, but I don't do no damn squealing. I can dig rapping. I'm ready. I can dig scrapping.